welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley from Washington, D.C. And we are now descending further into the depths of the worst world economic and financial depression in human history. Make no mistake about that. It is a killer depression, a genocidal depression. And unlike what the right-wing parrots of talk radio are telling you, this is a depression that can be fought. It must be fought, and it must be defeated, stopped in its tracks, outflanked, broken up, and replaced with a new era of prosperity. All of that is within human ken. It is within the limits of human knowledge and human will. But you've got to throw off the idiocy, the ideological nostrums of our dear friends, the anarcho-narco-libertarians and libertines of the Chicago School and the Austrian School. It's going to take New Deal economics, friends. Now, let's look at the questions that face us right now. We're recording on Friday the 13th, and it looks like Friday the 13th, February 13th, 2009, is going to be marked by the passage of Obama, Pelosi, Reid, and their stimulus bill. There's much to criticize in this, and we will go through it. But here is our guideline. In a depression like this, don't worry about pork. Don't worry about pork barrel legislation. We've lived with that for many, many decades. It's a constant feature of Democratic politics. It even has positive features. Forget about pork. Forget about earmarks. Forget about this stuff. Don't worry about pork. Worry about genocide. Worry about provisions in these bills sponsored by Obama, Pelosi, Reid, and company with the complicity of many and many a reactionary Republican, including liberal Republicans as well. Watch out for the features that will kill. Watch out for features that call themselves entitlement reform or the reduction of spending, which is no longer sustainable. Entitlement reform basically means that they're going to strip you of your economic rights. They're going to try to take away the economic rights that were fought for by generations of Americans. In things like the Civil War is an aspect of this, and since it's Lincoln Week, we're going to also look at it from this point of view. Today, February 13th, the Washington Post editorial page discussing the abortive nomination of the Republican reactionary Gregg to the Obama cabinet says that Gregg is better off in the Senate. Obama is right that some of the hard things he wants to accomplish can't be done without Republican help. And on one such goal, entitlement reform, Mr. Gregg may be a better ally in the Senate than in the cabinet. Entitlement reform. Entitlement reform? We never heard about that. We heard about hope and change. We heard about all the malarkey. We heard about messianic and utopian platitudes promising a golden age when the lion would lie down with the lamb. Where did this entitlement reform come from? Listeners to this program know when this came on the scene. And once again, it's our dear friends at the Washington Post, the house organ of the Federal Reserve System, who tell us in the issue of Friday, January 16th, almost a month ago now, and couple of days before Obama's abortive inaugural address, we find Obama telling the Washington Post editorial board that it's important to include in the question of recovery the long-term financial ills, the need to rein in health care costs, to cut health care costs, to stabilize Social Security, meaning loot it, and to prevent the Medicare program from bankrupting the government. All of this means genocidal austerity on the home front. Cuts that will kill. Obama says to the Washington Post editorial board on that fateful Thursday, January 15th, this, by the way, is where there are going to be very difficult choices and issues of sacrifice and responsibility and duty, he said. You have to be a president who is willing to spend some political capital on this, and I intend to spend some. The language, of course, is that of George Bush in 2005, his political capital that he invested in his own attempt to destroy Social Security and, indeed, Medicare. He failed because it was impossible to unite the oligarchy, the two wings, the Republicans and the Democrats, around that plan. Now Obama's going to try it again, and that's what's going on behind the scenes. So I urge you, your first and most important rule of thumb is ignore the chatter, the demagogy, the imbecility of the right-wing radio talk shows, the O'Reillys, the Hannitys, the Levins, the Limbaughs, of course, Limbaugh being the leader of the pack. Remember that when it comes to economics, they have been on the wrong side of these issues. They've been parroting deregulation, privatization, union busting, and the race to the bottom the whole time. They are the architects of the Depression. Certainly there's plenty to go around, but the ideology represented by them, the Chicago, Austrian, deregulation, privatization, anti-government, anti-state, anti-New Deal, Roosevelt-hating ideology, that's one of the main ingredients of this entire crisis. It's one of the reasons that the world is now careening into the abyss of the worst economic depression really in recent history, because even 1929, you could say that was the breakdown of the pound-based world system that had dominated for about a century and a half. Right now it's the death agony of the U.S. dollar, and as some people have said, this is just the beginning. So forget pork. Forget earmarks. What a joke. Who cares about earmarks? We'll even see. Some earmarks are actually good. You got to look at them case by case. But genocide is never good. Now, what do I mean by this? We're going to talk today about the stimulus. We're going to talk above all about Geithner. We're going to talk about the thing that these right-wing talkers don't want to talk about. They don't talk about Geithner. Geithner wants $1.5 trillion for Wall Street and only for Wall Street, only for J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Bank of America, and the rest of them. They get $1.5 trillion, and the right-wing talkers are worried that a few hundred million are going to go into some state Medicaid program to provide health care for poor people. So they're saying, what is this S-CHIP, this state child health insurance program? That violates the private sector. That violates the Austrian school and the Chicago school. That violates free enterprise. And at the same time, the bankers are walking off through the back door with $1.5 trillion. So let's get our criteria straight. The other big criterion we've got to have is not one penny for Wall Street. Not one penny. Not one penny more, and claw back whatever there is. And we've got an interesting idea here in the Washington Post of today. Eugene Robinson, pro-Obama all the way. He says, Geithner should pay more attention to the unrequited Old Testament wrath that seems to be brewing over the financial crisis. I know it's dangerous to generalize from anecdotal evidence, says Eugene Robinson, editorial page, op-ed in the Washington Post, today, Friday the 13th. Is I know it's dangerous to generalize from anecdotal evidence, but I have to pay attention when, as happened this week, an obviously intelligent, otherwise reasonable-sounding gentleman left me a voicemail calling for the public execution of Wall Street miscreants. Now, that's the mood. The mood of the American people is anti-Wall Street, anti-financier, anti-speculator, anti-parasite. They've had enough of the hyenas, the jackals, the raptors, the ticks, the leeches, the bloodsuckers, the vampires of Wall Street. Wall Street is the enemy. Government is the enemy to the extent it's controlled by Wall Street. Control it yourself, and it becomes your tool to bash Wall Street over the head. This is the essence of class consciousness, to realize that there are different groups in the society. We're not dealing with undifferentiated humanity. We're dealing with oligarchs. We're dealing with the few. We are the many, they're the few, and that is not going to change, but the balance has got to be redressed. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. So there are basically three prongs to Barry's approach. And one is the stimulus. One is the Geithner bailout, the son of TARP, $1.5 trillion, largely government spending, although they claim they'll get it from someplace else. I really doubt it. And then the most sinister of all, lurking on the horizon, Barkey's Entitlement Reform Summit, marked by sacrifice, responsibility, and duty. Dr. Hope and Change are out the window, and Dr. Responsibility, Sacrifice, and Duty, for you, not for Wall Street, are back. Yeah, naturally, Wall Street will have to abandon their jet and only have a limousine. They'll be crying for that. But you will go from your home to living under a bridge, and you will be left with nothing but your eyes to cry with. That's the Wall Street program. Barkey is bad not because he's a socialist, but because he's a tool of Wall Street finance capital. He's a banker's boy. This is the essence of the matter. Now, in judging all of these questions, you got to have an idea of what a real recovery program would look like. Let me just tick off the points briefly so we have a measure against which we can match up the things that are being proposed. There are basically 4 points. They can be articulated into hundreds and thousands of points, but 4 points are basically it. One is that if you want to have an economic recovery, you first got to remove the tremendous weight of fictitious, bloated, speculative paper, or in this case, electronic capital, from the entire system. In other words, you've got to have comprehensive re-regulation, comprehensive nationalization in some cases, but mainly re-regulation, and you've got to requite some of the things that have gone on. It means, first of all, a ban on derivatives, not just banning new derivatives. You've got to make sure that the existing derivatives are wiped out, because this is the problem that underlies the events of this past week, is that there are 1.5 thousand trillion, 1.5 quadrillion of derivatives in this system that cannot be dealt with. They're a black hole. There's not enough money in the world. There are enough resources in the world to come anywhere near this. This is what the iceberg that Geithner ran aground on this week. You've got to wipe out derivatives. Derivatives were banned from 1936 until 1982. Stupid Reagan brought them back. Wendy Graham helped along. Robert Rubin, Greenspan, Bernanke, they all love derivatives. They think derivatives are great. You can see an article a week ago in Newsweek. We've got the Yale economist Robert Shiller. I wonder if he's a member of Skull and Bones, telling you how great derivatives are. Maybe derivatives are the way out of this. We've also got Samuelson in the Newsweek of this week, the one with socialism on the cover, saying that securitization has got to be revived. Well, securitization is another way to say derivatives. What you've got to do is take credit default swaps, structured investment vehicles, mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, collateralized debt obligations, auction rate securities, and anything that has an option built into it, and wipe them off the books. Cancel them, delete them, shred them, bonfire of the derivatives, get rid of them. Derivatives will prevent a recovery because they will suck in all the monetary capital that anybody could ever put into this system. So that's essential. Then you got to do some obvious things. Ban hedge funds. Wipe them out. Regulate them. Once they're regulated, they're not hedge funds. That's easy. Then you got to do things like outlaw the adjustable rate mortgage. There should be no such thing. You've got to re-regulate commodities markets. Hey, notice that the price of gas is creeping up again? Oh, my God. Nothing has been done to regulate those markets. Barkey, help. Pelosi, help. Reed, help. No, well, they're not going to do it. It'll have to be fought through by the people. And that means if you want to go in and speculate in the New York commodities market, the New York Merck on oil and oil futures, you've got to pay 100% cash up front. No margin. Zero margin, 100% cash. If you're a speculator, you are put in a disadvantaged position. If you're a hedger, meaning that you're in the market because you use this stuff to make something, you're manufacturing something with it, then you get privileges by comparison. But the speculator has got to be identified, has got to be watched like a hawk, and put at a disadvantage compared to the industrial user, because the industrial user produces things that human civilization requires for its survival. You've also got to have position limits. You've got to limit the amount of of gasoline or whatever it is, futures of any kind of commodity, and it extends to strategic raw materials of all sorts, you got to limit the amount that people can buy of this sort. So with that, you could stop the price of gas from going up. It was down to about $1.80. Now it's up to $2.25. You want to stop that? That's Goldman Sachs trying to revive at your expense. That's a subsidy that you're paying to J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. You want to do that in the name of the free market? Be my guest, but I will demur on that one. So that's the first point. You've got to re-regulate this economy. The second point, the main one, nationalize the Federal Reserve. Seize it. Rip it out of the hands of this clique, this cabal of bankers. It has failed three times. It failed in the crash of 1929, failed even more in the banking panic of 1932-33. It has now failed for the third time. Baseball rules, three strikes and you're out. Federal Reserve is seized, nationalized, becomes the Bureau of the Treasury. Not because there's some magic in that, but because you're going to use it for something. There's a purpose for this. There's a function that this bank has to carry out. Immediate emission, $1 trillion of credit. And the approved categories for borrowing are production only. Production, yes, you heard it, the word that you don't hear. Derivatives, of course, is a big taboo. Production is probably even a bigger taboo. Production. Somebody's got to think about production. You can't distribute it if it's not there. Wealth does not grow on trees. Wealth has got to be produced. This is the saga of human civilization going back many, many decades and millennia. So what you've got to do is to say, if you're an industrial manufacturer, if you're an agricultural producer, if you're building infrastructure, if you're running a mine, if you're involved in scientific research, you get, I think by now we've got to say 0%, because the depression is getting so much worse, but let's say between 1% and 0% rates on federal credit. And again, they all say, the reason we have to bail out the banks is so that they will be lending. Yeah, the banks will never lend. J.P. Morgan Chase is a black hole of derivatives. It's a derivatives monster. It does not lend for plant and equipment. It lends for speculation only, because only speculation can provide the rates of return that J.P. Morgan Chase requires in order to survive, they think, in this world of risk, they think. Therefore, you want lending? Government has to lend. You want to have loans? Make them. Make them through the federal government. That's what you can control. Private sector, harder to control. I'll give you an interesting vampire analogy on this stuff later on. Maybe we can make this intelligible through the saga of Count Dracula. But the idea is, seize the Federal Reserve. Force them as a Bureau of the Treasury with a public law. House, Senate, signed by the President, fully debated, public view, nothing done in the middle of the night. $1 trillion for production only. Also, socially necessary stuff, health care, things that are not directly productive but are absolutely necessary, health care and so forth. And a lot of this will go into rebuilding infrastructure. And we'll be back with a couple of other points in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Because of the tremendous amount of material that we've got to cover. Summing it up, the first two steps, the depression is caused by deindustrialization, derivatives, and deregulation. Deregulation, opening up derivatives and gas speculation and all this other stuff. So we need to be pro-producer. It's got to be done in the name of production, in the name of producers, not speculators. Producers, not parasites. So you got to fight the three Ds. This is a depression in three dimensions: deindustrialization, derivatives, and deregulation. So fight the three Ds, and you can clear the decks for a possible recovery. Then you got to nationalize the Fed, issue $1 trillion first tranche for productive activity only, and you've got to know the difference. And yes, Virginia, there is a difference, and no, narcotics are not included on the productive side, and they're not socially necessary either. So let's drop that one. The third point is you got to keep people alive in the meantime. You got to have things like unemployment insurance, Social Security Act 1935. You got to have food stamps. The strains on this program are now enormous. You've got to have Medicaid. Poor people have got to have access to to medical care. The best thing, of course, to do is Medicare for all. You've got to make sure that the Social Security pension is enough for people to live on, because that's all they're going to get. Forget 401k, forget IRA, forget everybody tossing their retirement hopes into the lap of the market, meaning Wall Street bandits. That's all gone. Any paper title, you can forget it. Any dollar-denominated thing, basically, and anybody's guess whether that's going to be worth anything. So you've got to index the Social Security pension so that it's big enough for people to live on. Same thing with Medicare. It's got to be enough to cover everything, because with AIG going down, we had another company, The Hartford, going down. You can see MetLife, Prudential. They're all in very, very bad shape, mainly because they're loaded with derivatives. You got to basically face the fact that the public pension is the only one you're going to have, and don't quibble about that. So one of the acid tests for any political leader is, are you prepared to advocate the doubling, minimal, the doubling of the Social Security pension and beefing up Medicare so that it's actually enough for people to live on? The fourth point, of course, the new Bretton Woods. You got to have a new world monetary system, and it's got to have development, production, modernization, science, technology, industry, progress have got to be built in. It can't work with monetary criteria primarily. The main point is production, recovery, and the defense of human civilization. So it's a new kind of a new approach. Really, it's the American system traditionalist approach. But in this fallen world of ours, this eclipsed world of fallen civilization, it's new. And it says that the heart of an economy is not a banking system. The heart of an economy is the machine tool sector and labor. And what's your employment rate? And what's your minimum wage? And what's your average wage? And how are people doing? What kind of diet do they have? What kind of homes do they have? What kind of educational opportunities do they have? Is there full employment? Those are the things to ask. Don't worry about the price of paper in any form. Forget paper. Think of production. Think of people. So no to paper. Think of production and people. Now, if we look at the stimulus, the obvious big problem is this. Daschle. Daschle is an apostle of genocide. I told you this before. Daschle, of course, the senator from Citibank. Citibank, the biggest employer in South Dakota during the time Daschle pretended to represent South Dakota, really represented Citibank. So Daschle is a banker's boy. We're very fortunate that Daschle was knocked out of the box. That was a wonderful piece of good fortune for the American people. It turns out that Daschle has gone very far down the road to open genocide. Daschle was supposed to be the expert who was going to reform Medicare and Medicaid, get him out of there and get him into Leavenworth. He has written a book, which we'll be looking at in coming weeks. We have all kinds of authors, right? We have Rahm Emanuel has written a book. Chuckie Schumer has written a book. But right now it's Tom Daschle, the senator from Citibank, that we need to look at. He basically says in his book that one of the things you've got to have in mind in healthcare reform is that senior citizens, old people, should be prepared to die. Yes. This is associated, of course, with the genocidal former governor of Colorado, Governor Richard Lamb, who went on the same idea, right? He said, well, when it's your time to go, you should go. Well, why should you go? Because you're defending the bottom line of Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, AIG, the Hartford, Connecticut General, and the rest of them. That's why. Basically, people are being called on, and this is basically what went on in Germany in the 30s and 40s. You're being called on to snuff out your mortal existence in favor of the bottom line of an insurance company. And naturally, of course, it plays into all the horrendous cultural pessimism, historical pessimism, and despair, right? Because if Barkey ran on hope, it means that there's a lot of despair out there, and there is, right? And we know the agitation of people like Hitler and Mussolini was a constant harping on despair and the way out of despair. So this tells us now, Daschle's plan that seniors and old people should be prepared to die. They should learn to accept their afflictions. They should learn to live with them, or if that's not possible, then you can see the rest, to die with them. In the stimulus, I think the one or two things in the stimulus that really have to be fought are the National Coordinator of Health Technology. Now, the National Coordinator of Health Technology is a Daschle-authored provision. Daschle stuck this into the bill before it was knocked out of the box, and it's got to be removed. And, you know, there's time to still call your congressman and senator and tell them, get this out of there. The National Coordinator of Health Technology is going to supervise what kinds of technology doctors can use, basically saying, well, if there's something that might save your life but it's too expensive, too bad for you, go gently into the good night. That's genocide. That's Nuremberg. That's a high crime against humanity. You can find yourself dangling at Nuremberg as a result of things like this. Daschle also required the creation of a super board, and this was going to be to overlook, to supervise all health care. And obviously the criterion here would be Malthusian cost-cutting, not the maximization of human life, human creativity, and the notion of defending human civilization, which is what all of this is about. So there is a huge attack on Medicare and on Medicaid and on SCHIP and so forth. And I would urge people, if you are following a right-wing or libertarian economic ideology that says that government should not provide health care services to keep people alive in a depression when nobody else will, because all the insurance companies are bankrupt through derivatives and speculation and mismanagement and imbecility. If you think that it's wrong for government to provide that, then basically you're working for Barkey. You're working for Barkey and for Daschle because they agree to. They pretend that they think that health care is a right, but they don't believe that. They believe that they're duplicitous, right? It's the difference between them and Bush. Bush was an open reactionary, a lout, a loudmouth. Everybody knows the story. Barkey, of course, slimy, slippery, shifty, and, wow, mendacious, right? The mendacity of dope is what we're dealing with today. We've got this blasé merchant of austerity and genocide in the White House, a weatherman in many ways, but he is much more clever than Bush. He hides what he wants to do, so you don't know what's happening until the knife goes in. So this is the big thing, I think, in the stimulus. You got to fight the provisions that try to impose euthanasia, genocide de facto for old people, and you've got to fight the parts about this government czar who's going to tell doctors what kinds of health care they can, you know, technology, right? Is kidney dialysis too much? Oh, my God. A lot of people are going to die. And, again, why? Because they say this kind of expenditure is unsustainable. Wait a minute. How is that unsustainable when you're spending $1.5 trillion on the bankrupt Wall Street banks? This is absolute moral insanity. You get the picture. We'll go through a couple of more details on this in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. The watchword today is don't worry about pork. Don't worry about earmarks. Worry about genocide directed against you. And genocide, there's a little genocidal provision that Tom Daschle, the senator from Citibank, slipped in, which basically says that even though Medicare is supposed to be there to provide health care for the elderly, that's the whole point, to reduce morbidity and mortality among those over 65, Daschle thinks that you should go gently into the good night. You should be prepared to croak in order to enhance the bottom line of AIG, Prudential, MetLife, and you get the drill, and to help the federal bond market, of course, right? Even though with what the other hand, they're giving $1.5 trillion to Wall Street parasites, hyenas, and raptors. So I think there's a certain degree of moral insanity in this, which I guess the term for it is actually fascism. Fascist genocide built in on orders from Tom Daschle. Now, I doubt that Daschle has left Washington. I'm sure he's plying his trade as a consultant and expert and lobbyist. So these are the kinds of people to watch out for. By contrast, most of the stuff that the right-wing parrots are talking about is actually trivial or, in some cases, actually might be beneficial. Let's take this idea. Harry Reid, obviously, wants to bring home the bacon. He wants to have high-speed rail from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. $8 billion. Great. Build it right away. Absolutely build it. Especially if we're talking maglev. And this is, of course, what's going on now in Japan, in China, in Germany, all the leading economies of the world are going to have magnetic levitation, magnetic cushion railway systems, right, the Transrapid German system or the other systems coming out of Japan and so forth. Let's build, and it's the only way. We've got to get maglev built. It's got to be built. We don't care how it gets built. Forget this money. This money is going to be eaten up by hyperinflation one way or another. A lot of these debts that they're contracting are going to be destroyed by hyperinflation at some point. If you're in a depression, the only question is, do you come out of it alive, and do you come out of it with an array of industrial equipment and infrastructure that allows you to stay alive? So Harry Reid, great. This is an example of the Leibnizian universe where evil intent produces a good result. Build the Verschlugene high-speed railway from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, and then people will see what a maglev looks like in this country, and then they're going to want it everywhere. Other negative examples, the Caterpillar president, right? The Caterpillar president is on the Volcker board. His name is Owens, and Barkey was there yesterday in Peoria, Illinois, and they asked him, are you going to be able to roll back your 20,000 layoffs at Caterpillar? And the guy said, no, there's not enough heavy construction in the bill. And that is the big problem with the stimulus bill. There's not enough infrastructure. Nobody knows what's in the bill still, even though they're going to vote on it within a couple of hours. But somewhere in there, there's a sum for increased infrastructure building, right? The roads, the bridges, and then generally repairing, renovating stuff that's left over from the Eisenhower-era interstate highway system and similar stuff. The problem is it's not enough. It's only about $40 billion. It should be $400 billion. It should be about half or whatever it's going to be. But it should be a huge sum, not some piddling $40 billion, which is not what it used to be given the devaluation of the dollar. So that's a real problem. There's much too much in here, of course, for the gangrene economy. Remember, every green job is a net loss. A green job in their parlance means the windmill, a thousands of year old technology, the solar cell, a 100 year old technology, and neither one is economic. This is the problem. You don't get as much energy out of these things as you put into them, not even in money terms, but in energy terms. They're a net loser. You don't need green jobs. You don't need a gangrene economy. You need the most modern technology that you can get. If that's nuclear, you better take it. If it's thermonuclear, you better take that. And if there's something beyond thermonuclear, you better take that. It's got to be the most modern technology. That is the law of the universe. That's natural law. Call it God's law, if that's how you talk and how you understand these things. But if you don't realize progress, if you don't realize scientific, technological, industrial progress, you will collapse. And that's, you know, the story of all these civilizations. Take a look in your Toynbee or your World Civilizations textbook, and you'll see how they go down. So the other, of course, the big problem is there's got to be something big in there. There's got to be something like the transcontinental magnetic levitation railway. Again, I think let Harry Reid build it from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, and then we can take it from there. That's at least a good piece of the way. You need a transcontinental magnetic levitation railway system. You need to modernize the urban mass transit in cities, right, here in the Washington, D.C. area. Build the light rail to Dulles Airport. Build the corridor cities in the Maryland suburbs. Build the Purple Line. Expand that to a circle line of the Washington Metro, and so on and so on. Start creating real jobs in those areas with modern stuff. And, of course, you've got to rebuild these things. Do you know that the United States is not capable of producing rail cars for the Washington, D.C. Metro? And, therefore, if you put a Buy America Only into anything that has to do with rail, it's going to go nowhere. There used to be something called the Bud Company in St. Louis. Where are they? You got to revive some of these things because you got to have a full set economy. Remember, people, if you don't have a full set economy, you are ethnographic material. Somebody more advanced will be sending out anthropologists to study you in the way that Barkey's mother went over to Indonesia to study them. Obviously, the space program here, let's talk about the space program for a minute. Here's the kind of stuff we need. This is the essence of optimism and progress, and you'll see the kind of reception that it's getting here in the morally depraved universe of Washington, D.C. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration has a proposal to go to Mars. And the cost on this is, you won't believe it, $2.2 billion. And, yes, it's true, we've got finance oligarchs coming forward to say, no, 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 $2.2 billion is too much. Well, this is exactly what you need. This should not be $2.2 billion. This should be $25 billion. You've got to have science drivers. Basically, the key to any stimulus is you've got to build infrastructure. You've got to build things that radically increase the productivity of labor. Now, the repair part and the renovation of what already exists is indispensable, of course. But also indispensable is you've got to have something in there that qualitatively enhances the productivity of labor, makes things better in some very obvious way for people. So you've got to have urban mass transit and stuff like this. You've got to have that coast-to-coast maglev and so forth. But then you've got to have your science drivers. You've got to think about the colonization, the exploration and permanent colonization of the moon, Mars, and nearby objects in the solar system. The payoff on that is generally 5-1, and if you do it right, it can get up to 10-1. In other words, $10 into your economy for every dollar spent. Look around you today. Internet, chips, all this stuff, completely a spin-off of the moonshot of the 1960s into the 1970s, totally deriving from government programs. There's no way around it. Internet, DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, not some an entrepreneur in his garage did this, but indeed the government. There's no way around it. The collective efforts of the people mobilized through their government, in that case, NASA. So full funding for NASA, and we should ridicule and mock the idiocy of the financiers and their tools who are telling us that we can't afford $2.2 billion for a space program when we can afford $1.5 trillion for the black hole of the Wall Street banks. I hope this difference is coming across. So you got to have biomedical research. You got to gear that up any way you can. Any money that goes into biomedical research is not pork. It's life-giving. You've got to have your space program going, and you've got to have your high-energy physics program so you get the next generation of energy production beyond nuclear. These are the essentials. Now, we'll be back in a minute to tell how we can compare the Wall Street banks to Count Dracula, draining the blood of a victim, and what has to be done, including defibrillation. Back in a minute. Watchword again, don't worry about pork. Worry about genocide directed against you through Daschle's attempt to speed elderly Americans to their eternal reward, that they should go gently into the bad night of Malthusian genocide in the service of Wall Street, as represented by Daschle, the senator from Citibank. Watch out for the National Coordinator of Health Technology. That's built into the bill. And watch out for the super board that Daschle has advocated. And watch out above all for the fact that sometime in probably March by now, there's going to be something called the Entitlements Summit or Entitlement Reform Summit under the watchwords of sacrifice, responsibility, and duty. Not hope and change anymore. It's going to be that kind of genocidal austerity. They're going to try to destroy Social Security, destroy Medicare. And if you profess an economic doctrine that makes it impossible for you to mobilize to fight Obama and to defend Social Security and Medicare, you have got to go into a crisis of conscience at this point. And look around and look at your favorite grandmother, grandfather, and ask, is it really right that they should be deprived of life and sustenance. They won't get Social Security in the necessary amount, and they won't get Medicare because of, apparently because of some abstract doctrine, but not really, because of the needs of Wall Street. In other words, all those slogans about free enterprise and the nanny state cover the thrust of Wall Street, which is to loot and pillage and destroy Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid so that they can convoy all that money into bigger and better bailouts. That's the crisis of conscience for the Austrians and Chicago adepts among us, the Friedmanites, if there are still any. So that's the point with the stimulus. Now, Geithner, let's look at Geithner. Geithner is, of course, Kissinger Associates, International Monetary Fund, Federal Reserve. He is the finance oligarch's finance oligarch. But notice also, Geithner is a feckless imbecile. He is an imbecile, he's a bungler, he's an incompetent. He actually reminds me of his master, Barkey, in all those departments, right? These are poseurs, these are frauds, these are the financial geniuses. So what happened was, of course, that one day this week, we had Geithner come out and essentially give a public appearance at the House Financial Services Committee, and Barkey had held a press conference the day before, and Barkey in his first press conference said, I'm not going to tell you the details of our wonderful plan for the banks now, the banks, not for you, but for the banks, but I'm going to let Geithner do that the next day. And there was a lot of buildup around this. The Washington Post on Sunday, February 8th, planning a 1-2 punch, the bailout in Geithner's overhaul, aggressive use of all available tools is expected. That was the word on Sunday. And then on Monday, the big headline in the Washington Post was that the bailout for the banks was going to reach $1.5 trillion. So imagine the disappointment on Tuesday, February 10th. Geithner appears. Now, Geithner, you notice he looks like a demon. He looks like a little an evil spirit. He's got these pointy ears. He looks like a kind of a junior Mephistopheles, I guess we'd have to say, Geithner. So he comes out to the House Financial Services Committee and he says, we have tried to get it right. It's very hard to get it right. We're going to keep working to try to get it right. And therefore, I'm not going to tell you what we're going to do because that would increase the instability of the market. So with that, he crashed the market by 400 points that day because the Wall Street finance oligarchs were salivating that he was going to tell them how many trillions they were going to get. And the estimates had gone up to, 2 to 3 trillion. Geithner had to basically punt. So Geithner won't tell you what he's going to do. Now, I submit, this is a very important moment. This is an epiphany. Why can't he tell you what he's going to do? Here's the problem. They're talking about a bad bank. The bad bank becomes a toxic receptacle, a kind of a toxic cleanup operation, where all the derivatives, remember, when they say toxic assets, when they say complex instruments, toxic assets, and so forth, they mean derivatives, 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 except that in the ruling elite and in their minions, there is a complete taboo on saying derivatives. The reason for this is, if it's clear to the average person that we're in a derivatives depression, everybody knows who did that, because the only people who deal in derivatives are bankers and Wall Street financiers, not even local bankers, some regional, but mainly J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest derivatives monster of all, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Lehman, Bear, well, they're gone. They're all gone, ultimately. But you get the idea. If it's a derivatives depression, then class consciousness grows because it's clear that the bankers created the depression. The government, of course, deregulated it. They allowed it. That's not an argument against government. That's an argument in favor of the New Deal. From 1936 to 1982, derivatives were illegal. Options were bathed in the aura of illegality. especially on agricultural commodities, but also in general. And remember, it took Reagan, Wendy Graham, Greenspan, Rubin, Summers, and this entire gang, right, to beat back the attempt of Brooks Liebourn to even make them reportable. You don't know how many derivatives there are in the world. Newsweek says 600 trillion, only 600 trillion. I say more than twice that. I say 1.5 trillion, sorry, 1.5 quadrillion. So it's either 600 trillion, that is 0.6 quadrillion, that's the lowball estimate from Newsweek, or my estimate, the accurate one, 1.5 quadrillion. And that, of course, is a matter of art, because it's not reportable. It should be reportable. Don't blame me. Don't come to me and say, hey, where did you get that number? Go out and agitate to make derivatives reportable. It's like saying, oh, well, I have cancer, but I don't know how much. I don't know what stage it is. Well, this is stage 300 in terms of the cancerous destruction of the world financial system. So Geithner's problem is, what's he going to say? Is he going to go out there and say, well, we need 500 trillion. We need 500 trillion to buy up the toxic assets in just the Wall Street money center banks. And even that wouldn't be enough. And put them in a bad bank. How can you do it? There's not enough money in the world. There's not enough money in the universe to deal with these derivatives. It can't be done. So he can't come out. It's really a conceptual, epistemological, cultural problem. He wants to do something to buy up the derivatives and help the banks who have basically mortgaged their existence to derivatives, but he can't, because the derivatives problem is too big if you assume that they have value and you've got to pay money into them. That's the fallacy. The only thing to do with derivatives is to destroy them. Wipe them out, cancel them, abrogate them, shred them, delete them, burn them, trample on them. What else can we do? Send them into outer space. That would also be a good idea. Put them all on a server, put that in a satellite, and send it towards the outer reaches of the solar system. And maybe when it comes back, we can deal with them. This is the basic problem. Geithner, and the same thing happened to Paulson, right? That was the thing. When Paulson said, I need $700 billion, I want to buy up toxic assets, he sincerely thought that he could buy up at least some of them and put them into, in this case, the hands of the government. It can't be done. And even Paulson had to realize, once I start this, we don't know how much to pay for them. We don't know what they are. We don't know. We can't do it. And now Geithner has run up against the same thing. The only answer, wipe out derivatives. Wipe them out.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley in Washington, D.C., commending to you, of course, my books, Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, both available from Amazon.com. In particular, this week we get Obama emerging as the new Carter, right? Bungling, already newspaper articles, Obama a one-term president, Obama the new Carter, Obama pushing the politics of fear as a new version of Carter's politics of malaise. If you want to know what Obama's going to do, read that book that's written almost a year ago, based on Carter 3 decades ago, because that's going to play out, right? The same trilateral ideology, the same Volcker, the same Brzezinski, the same David Rockefeller, same controllers, same stuff, same imbecilic monetarist ideology under leftist disguise, of course. Totalitarian liberalism, I guess we can call it, verging on neo-fascism. Now, let's try to make this understandable. We're saying that the derivatives have got to be destroyed, removed, and then you've got to restart production, you want to restore confidence. It's got to be done through government action, because the private sector has struck out. The private sector is not doing these things. Don't tell us the private sector stands ready to provide health care. They haven't done it. 4 decades of reactionary Republican domination, and they haven't done it. Don't tell us that the private sector, Calamity Schles, we had Calamity Schles last week. Oh, the private sector was ready to do rural electrification in the Tennessee Valley. We didn't need the TVA. So why didn't they do it then? They didn't do it. That was the point. They had the whole 1920s to do it. They didn't lift a finger until they thought they could somehow block the government from doing this stuff. Here's the thing. You've got the U.S. economy, okay? You got to think about it fright night. Some people compared Geithner's press conference, or actually Balky's press conference last Monday, to fright night. He was afraid to look you in the eye. He's shifty, slimy, slippery, and mendacious, the mendacity of dope coming from bailout Balky and bomber Balky. The point is, fright night, Dracula, the vampire. Okay. The victim of the vampire is the U.S. economy. You've got to imagine the victim on the ground, Count Dracula, has got his fangs in the jugular vein, and he's trying to suck the blood of the victim. Well, what do you do? Paulson, Bush, Geithner, Obama come along and they say, let's give a blood transfusion to Count Dracula. We'll put the blood into Count Dracula, and then eventually, he'll become so sated with blood, Count Dracula will become so saturated with blood, that the blood will go back out through Count Dracula's fangs into the jugular of the victim, and the victim can be revived. Let's give a transfusion, but not directly to the victim, only through Count Dracula, because Count Dracula represents a compelling state interest. Well, this is obviously ridiculous. When you see a vampire sucking the blood of a victim who is named the U.S. economy. Count Dracula, of course, represents Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, the New York Federal Reserve, the finance oligarchy in general. You have got to rip Count Dracula off the victim. You've got to get him off the victim, get the fangs out. You've got to put a stake through his heart, right? You've got to send him into the great beyond. And then you've got to do a transfusion into the victim, not through Count Dracula. You don't have the transfusion going through the banking system and hope that it reaches the economy, which is the victim. And again, when I say banking system in this case, it means these few money center banks, because really the derivatives are limited to basically the top 10. If you do the top 10, you've got 90 to 95% of the derivatives problem. And with a few other things, that would go far. You don't want to start interfering with local banks in this way necessarily, not even regional banks in some cases, but the big money center ones, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Citi, and these counting houses that are now masquerading as banks. They're the ones that have got to be put into Chapter 11 because they're bankrupt. And according, you know, the legality of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Sheila Bear is breaking the law. She's not seizing J.P. Morgan Chase, which is a commercial bank and a member of the Fed, and it's bankrupt because it has more than 10 or 15% non-performing assets. So to get back to Count Dracula, when you see Count Dracula attacking the victim, you don't try to have a blood transfusion through the count and into the victim, that is, through Wall Street and into the U.S. economy. You rip away Count Dracula, stop him from sucking the blood, stake through his heart, that means shred the derivatives, delete them, wipe them out. Then you've got to give your direct blood transfusion into the victim, but you also need a defibrillator. And this is the idea. You've got to work both sides. In a normal economy, there's lending and there's borrowing, right? Takes two to tango. You've got to have a credit source, and then you've got to have entrepreneurs because you want to revive a private sector, that's for sure. This is not all done by government, right? This is not a command economy with a GOS plan, right? You can have indicative planning is good, but the planning everything down to the last bolt, no, that you don't want. That's been a failure. That's clear. So what you have to do is, first of all, promote lending, and then you got to promote borrowing. So here's the idea. The defibrillator is this, and you're working both sides of the borrowing-lending equation. The defibrillator is you seize the Federal Reserve, make it a Bureau of the Treasury, and you say, we're putting out $1 trillion of credit for production only immediately. And the main categories are going to be infrastructure and production, industrial production, and scientific research, mining, manufacturing, farm production, all these interesting things that we need to have for human civilization to go on. But on the other hand, you've also got to provide people don't want to borrow it. So the way you do that is to say, we are launching the Transcontinental Maglev Railway. Imagine the contractors for this. We're going to have a sea-level canal from Lake Superior to the Columbia River, or pretty much, right? We're going from the upper Missouri River. We're going to connect the Mississippi-Missouri Great Lakes combo into the Pacific Ocean so that you can actually have bulk carriers taking wheat and other bulk agricultural products from Minnesota and the Dakotas directly to the Pacific through a canal, because it's the cheapest for this kind of stuff. These kinds of great projects of infrastructure, the rebuilding of the interstate highway system, mass transit for every important city, the Transcontinental Maglev Railway, and then the ramifications of that in every region, and so on. That provides the demand. In other words, those are the borrowers. And in most of those cases, if the contractor, the prime contractor, is not the federal government, it'll be a state government or a local government. Every place has got these things. We have here in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C., all kinds of projects that would make life better, right? The intercounty connector from the Rockville-Gaithersburg area over to I-95. We've got those rail projects that I mentioned before, the rebuilding of the Washington City Metro, which is now 30 years old and becoming quite decrepit and was not done on the necessary scale in the first place. Every city has these things. Those have all got to be done. Then you get a recovery. So get Count Dracula off the victim. Don't try to have a transfusion through the count into the victim. Get Count Dracula away, stake through his heart, wipe out the derivatives, seize the Fed, credit for production, and you'll have a recovery. It's that simple.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. And now, as we try to do every week, let's get a legal report on the struggle to defend the Constitution against the usurper Obama. And for this, we turn, as usual, to Philip J. Berg of Philadelphia, distinguished attorney, former candidate for U.S. Senate and governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, former member of the Democratic State Committee of Pennsylvania, former Democratic County Chairman of Montgomery County, north of Philadelphia, and one of the leaders, one of the few who have waged an effective legal and public relations propaganda campaign to expose the fact that Obama is neither native-born nor is he a citizen, as far as human intellect can tell. Welcome, Phil.
Be with you, and thank you for your kind words.
Well, you deserve them. You deserve that and more. And, of course, you've been featured in the Globe now. You've been on the supermarket checkout lines twice in the month of January, and I know you're preparing new action. So we're a little bit pressed for time today because of the economic situation. But please give us a report. We've got one segment to work with.
Sure, and we have no problem in the economic situation. Obama solved the problem.
He gestured emphatically.
You know, well, let me ask one question on that. Maybe you'll know or check out. I believe about a month ago when they were proposing the stimulus package, they kept saying we're going to create 3 to 4 million new jobs.
Create or preserve, and that's a great escape clause, because you can if any jobs exist, you can always say, well, we preserve them.
Well, no, that's the difference. Maybe there isn't a distinction. I thought a month ago they were just going to create 3 to 4 million new jobs, but in the last week they keep pushing we're going to create or save, and they've dropped it to 3 million jobs. Is that new, that save coming? I think it is, or was that there a month ago?
Well, we have the, with Obama, it's not the 4-H club, it's the 4-S club, shifting, slimy, sleazy, and slippery, and he's a moving target, right? He changes every day, so.
That's worth checking, though, when you have time, but let me go on my Obama cases right now. We have three cases pending. One, the one the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take, is pending in the United States Third Circuit Court of Appeals. We filed our brief on January 20th. We're waiting now for response briefs from Obama, the DNC, the FEC, and about four or five other defendants. Their responses due shortly. That's the one we were knocked out for standing, and we believe we have standing, and we'll work that case through. The next case is the Hollister case, the retired Air Force Colonel Hollister versus Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama. We got some terse order from the – I didn't post it yet – from the judge. We filed this past Monday when it was due. I should say that Obama and Biden is who we sued. They filed a motion to dismiss, which is hiding behind the legalisms. Again, it's proper. But on a motion to dismiss, there's two responses that can happen. One is we can file a response to motion to dismiss. And the other is we can just file a first amended complaint. The judge has chastised us for filing a first amendment complaint this past Monday and ordered us to file a motion to the response to the motion to dismiss by today. If not, he's going to just say that forfeited the motion to dismiss, but we've conceded it. So I'm sure we're going to file a motion today, but I can read ahead that this judge, the way his order was terse, that by Tuesday, because I think they closed on Monday, I'm sure he's going to dismiss our case. But we're filing an appropriate response, and it'll get posted later today or very shortly. People should read it. And we'll take him up on appeal because the way his order came down is obvious he's very prejudicial in our opinion on this case. The third case, the motion under the case under seal, which I can't talk about yet, and I think that might be our darling case. That case, I just filed a motion to unseal the case, and we're waiting for a response, which hopefully we'll get next week. So we're there. We're dedicated to finding out the truth in Obama. We're getting ready to file a fourth action, which is a quo warranto, which means it questions the person in office, basically stating that they have no right to be in that office. So as I've said before on your show, and I appreciate being on your show all the time, we are dedicated to finding out the truth about Obama. Like I just saw someone now a minute ago, and I said about Obama, have you heard about the question whether he's natural born? And the person said, yeah, he was either born in Hawaii or Kenya. I think he was born in Kenya. I said, you're right. So the topic is getting more and more out there. We're asking everyone to go to our website, ObamaCrimes.com. We're asking any of your listeners to go there and to send it to everyone on their address book and ask those people to send it further on. We believe 5, 10, 15 million people are aware of this. We have to raise the awareness between 75 and 100 million people. If the American public knew what was going on, I don't care what their stance was, if they would know that Obama refuses to produce a birth certificate to show that he's natural born, or refuses to produce documents when he came back through immigration from Indonesia, and refuses to produce documents that his name has been legally changed after he was adopted and his name in Indonesia was Barry Sotoro. I think if the American public do it, they would be outraged. And so we're asking people to do that. If they can make any contribution, it would be great. And also stay tuned to our website, ObamaCrimes.com, because we're planning ahead. Either someone's trying to have a huge march the end of March to Washington, and I really haven't had time to talk to the person yet. We're going to see if that would work. The only way I want to participate in that, if we knew we could get large numbers out, we're thinking of setting up rallies around the country at different cities, something like we've used before. If three or four people stood at a major intersection with signs at morning or evening rush hour, you can, depending on how busy the area is, you can reach between 5 and 25,000 individuals. So I'm asking everyone to stay focused. We might do a letter-writing campaign. We're planning something. We're focused. We've been focused since August 21st when we filed our first lawsuit. We ask everyone to bear with us. This is our seventh month in. We're going to continue on this, and we're going to get to the bottom of this thing because I think it's outrageous. It's really outrageous that here he was sworn into office. He's a usurper. He has no right to be in office, and we're going to do everything in our power to expose him.
Wonderful, Phil. Remember, I'm recommending that you write a book. You should have a book out on this. It would be a bestseller for sure. Try to have a high-level legal conference in Philadelphia or some nearby place. And the other one is you got to think about a nationwide campus tour or other tour to take this to the principal urban centers. Let me ask you a question, though. We've got the new Solicitor General of the United States is this charming lady from Harvard Law School. And I think either her or connected to her is that Obama is asserting the same state secrets doctrine as the Bush administration, saying that they get to declare certain things state secret, and that's it. The ACLU, after having supported Obama, hook, line, and sinker, are shocked. Now, the ACLU have never helped you, but now they're shocked that the state secrets dodge is being continued from Bush to Obama, seamless, unchanged.
Well, I'm not surprised. I don't trust a word that Obama says. He talks out both sides of his mouth, but I'd like you to check that part as far as when the saving jobs just came up. I believe that's new because they know they can't create the number of jobs that they said they could create. And I don't think this package, I hope it would turn the country around. I don't think it's the right way to go. We would have been better off giving every person in this country, every family in this country, like $20,000 or $30,000 rather than backing these banks and loans. If every family in this country got $20,000 or $30,000, I assure you it would improve the economy because they would go out and spend.
Yes, I suppose it would. However, I urge you, Phil, tune into this program sometime on demand and hear the part that you missed, because I went through the question of economic recovery in quite a bit of detail. And unfortunately, the Keynesian models don't even work. You need the American system models, and it takes a little bit more. Anyway, Matt, we want to thank Phil Berg. Now, that website, of course, is ObamaCrimes.com, and this has been viewed by 150 million, I guess. Something like that. So we thank Phil Berg and certainly have you back next week.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Back to World Crisis Radio. We got to do some quick items and then say something about Lincoln, because we've got the week of Lincoln, the greatest man of the 19th century, 200th anniversary of his birth this week. In terms of the Mars mission, Washington Post, February 11th, 2009, Mars mission has some seeing red. NASA got $1.63 billion for a Mars shot. Now it's $2.2 billion. And the number crunchers, the finance oligarchs, don't like it. They hate the space program. This is your science driver. Without things like this, you don't get out of a depression. Look at that informatics. Look at the IT. Look at the Internet. Look at computers. That all came out of the moonshot and DARPA. So get with the program. The Mars mission should fly, not for $2.2 billion. We should have a $25 billion space budget given these idiotic, depreciated dollars. And, of course, more hyperinflation is coming. Some quick items. There's this Kanjorski story. Congressman Kanjorski on the 27th of January on C-SPAN talked about a threat of a blowout of the entire banking system, $550 billion in a couple of hours. Estimate was 5 to 6 trillion by the end of the day, and therefore they had to step in. The Treasury tried, and then the Fed had to come in. This was the busting of the buck. This was the primary fund, one of these money market mutual funds that busted the buck, went below a dollar per share on September 16th, 17th, and 18th. I think what he's talking about is on 18th. It was caused by Lehman Brothers. It was caused by Lehman Brothers going bankrupt on the Ides of September, 15th of September. And $785 million of Lehman bonds busted the primary fund, and that caused the panic. So there we were, and I think it's true, very close to a blowout of the world banking system, hours away. Time to re-regulate. Time to make sure that can never happen again. Now, Limbaugh talks about this. Limbaugh accuses Soros. He says this is a conspiracy of Soros. Good. Limbaugh, go with that. That's constructive, Limbaugh. Stop your idiotic anti-government prating and attack the people who really have power, who own the government and run the banking system, Soros. If you go after Soros, then you're close to the heart of the entire Obama machine. Couple of points on international politics that we will be spending more time on right now. We've got First of all, the International Criminal Court is about to indict General Bashir of Sudan for genocide. This is a absolutely transparent ploy of the Anglo-Americans to attack Sudan as a means of cutting off the oil that goes from Sudan to China. Don't listen to their idiocies. You've also got Uganda and Rwanda attacking into Congo. This is part of the natural resource war. This is part of the big Anglo-American imperialist push to kick the Chinese out of Africa, to cut off oil and vital raw materials going from Africa to China. This is the Brzezinski plan in action. We also find out that there's a plan to turn Karzai of Afghanistan into the new President Diem. Remember that the assassination of President Diem was actually what made the Vietnam War unwinnable and a tragedy. Now, Karzai, whatever he is, creature of Union Oil or whatever it was, is being targeted by the Obamazoids. They want to get rid of him. Biden walked out of a dinner with Karzai about a year ago, so that gives you the idea. Holbrooke, the mad bomber of Serbia, is on his way to Pakistan, Afghanistan, India. He faces mass rage in Pakistan because of the continued U.S. bombing policy. There is a march on Washington. I don't know if this is what Phil had in mind. The Answer Coalition, 21 March. Problem with Answer is too sectarian. Got to have a broad range of speakers. Answer, a little bit too sectarian. But United for Peace and Justice is still in love with Barkey. Curb Pink is still in love with Barkey. They're both sending valentines to Barkey so that Barkey will do nice things. Now, let's talk about Abraham Lincoln 200th anniversary this week. This would be worth a program all its own. The greatest man of the 19th century. What's the situation? The British Empire in 1861 was approaching the height of its power, and there was a bid for universal monarchy, that is to say, undisputed world domination on the part of the British. They had knocked off just about everybody under the guidance of Lord Palmerston, the dominant personality of British imperialism, Lord Russell also involved in this. They had been attacking China with the Opium Wars from the 1830s to the 1860s. Three opium wars so the British East India Company could take opium from India and introduce it into China for money and also to destroy the society and to destroy the human spirit in those areas. Remember the whole British economics, right? The so-called classical, Ricardo, Malthus, Mill, Bentham, all of those people are drug pushers from the British East India Company circles. And modern monetarism, modern Keynesianism, all the British-inspired schools of economics come from that same British East India Company, the drug pushers. So they're attacking China. They attacked Russia with the Crimean War using Napoleon III in France as their continental dagger, their kamikaze puppet on the continent. They were attacking India in the Great Mutiny, the so-called Sepoy Rebellion of the late 1850s, to impose direct British rule over all of India. They're attacking all around the world, every government in Europe overthrown in the 1848 revolutions. Metternich toppled, the July monarchy of France of Louis-Philippe of the House of Orléans toppled, everybody destabilized, and out of it comes the British bid for world domination. Now, it basically comes down to the attempt to destroy the United States. The Confederacy is a project of the British, project of Lord Palmerston. It's the same kind of thing that Brzezinski is doing today with his mini-states and micro-states, promoting secessionism. Anybody who talks about secessionism today in any form is either foundation-funded or controlled by one of the most rotten intelligence factions. And what they're doing is exactly what Brzezinski says in Second Chance. Mini-states, micro-states are the way to dignity. So let's not go back to the vomit of secessionism. This is absolute evil, and look at what it led to. Look at the attempt to have a government based on states' rights, which led to basically a totalitarian dictatorship in the Confederate States of America. If the Confederacy had succeeded, the British would have ruled the world, and there would have been the Confederate States expanding into Central America and Mexico as a slave empire based on colonial production, cotton, sugar, and related production, tobacco, of course. The attack of Napoleon III on Mexico with Maximilian, and this attempt to violate the Monroe Doctrine, same thing. Notice also that the Spanish went back into Santo Domingo at the same time, also violating the Monroe Doctrine. The way that the world was saved was the cooperation of Lincoln with Tsar Alexander II of Russia, who sent the Russian fleet to New York and to San Francisco in the summer of 1863, and with Bismarck of Germany, who kept Napoleon III tied down on the Rhine so he couldn't send more French forces into Mexico to attack the United States through there. And, of course, the British would have attacked through Canada if they'd had the logistical ability, but they didn't have it. So that's the situation. The Gettysburg Address, the government of the people, by the people, for the people, is the response of Lincoln to Lord Palmerston's speech, Civis Romanus Sum, I am a citizen of the Roman Empire, which was Lord Palmerston's declaration in the 1850s that the world was approaching a universal empire, a new world order under the control of the British and from London. It's the closest that anybody has ever come to destroying all resistance, because by the time Palmerston made that speech, there was the Russians, there were the Prussians, and there was the U.S., and that was it. Everybody else had been conquered or neutralized, or in the case of the Chinese, driven back off the coast of their own country, and the British were preparing to invade them and carve them up. The Battle of Gettysburg and the failure of Pickett's charge is the turning point of world history, because it says that the bid of the Confederates to get recognized and supported by the British has failed. So this essentially makes Abraham Lincoln the savior of the world, the creator of the modern civilization as we've known it in the 1860s. And we owe a great debt to this greatest man of the 19th century. So don't fall for vile secessionism today. Honor Abraham Lincoln. We'll be back next week.